Hello, this is Improvised Radio Theatre with Dice, with me, Michael Kuehl.
And me, Roger Bell West.
And blazing June Ugh. Is not exactly blazing on us at the moment. It's a bit chilly and overcast.
It's quite blazing enough for me, mate.
I'm enjoying my hay fever diminishes in the cooler, wetter weather. And this time, I'm going to be consulting my resident consultant game master about some issues.
Oh, have we got a guest?
That's you, Roger.
Okay.
Take the juice. Calm yourself down. And we will be discussing a new campaign. I'm starting soon. Hopefully, it will have started by the time you hear this. And so I won't be giving any spoilers to my players and other matters. Roger has been gadding about all over the place, or at least he's been gadding about up to Birmingham, which is a sufficient gad my sort of age.
I went to UK Games Expo.
We are slightly unworthy. And what did you do at US Games Expo?
Well, mostly I was demonstrating War of the Nine Realms for Wotan Games, as I often do, but since that is a board game, it is off topic for this podcast.
See his one of his other podcasts, doubtless.
But what I did want to talk about was the role-playing sessions that I engaged in, because one of them was very good and one of them was quite good.
Okay, what was the very good one?
A Call of Cthulhu game. The scenario was The Derelict, which was, as far as I can tell, originally published as a free RPG Day scenario in 2016. It's in the 2017 collection of Peterson's Abominations. And basically, you are crossing the Atlantic on a yacht. You are not competent yachtspeople. You're going along with your rich friend who's taking the yacht to Europe to sell it as one last hurrah. When you come across a ship apparently in distress, or at least sitting in a not happy sort of way next to an iceberg.
Ooh.
And so naturally you lend a hand. I won't go into spoilers. That's all part of the setup. But I think it's fair to say that like many Cthulhu one-shots, it falls into two phases. There is the poking about and finding stuff out phase.
And the running about and screaming
and
phase?
And then there is the fight. But we had a good GM. Not all of us were old hands at Call of Cthulhu. One of the players, I think, hadn't played it before at all. But we all had a good time. And that was great. The other one was Slayborg.
What?
I have never played Morkborg in any of its incarnations before.
All right. Tell the more innocent amongst us what Morkborg is.
As I understand it, it is basically, in the original version, it's a dungeon bash game. But the essential premise is you are a bunch of idiots who think that you are the heroes.
Right. So comedy and gore, yes?
Yeah. So this incarnation of it is in the Slay Industries setting, which is very much cyberpunk and corporate operatives and such. So you think you are corporate operatives, but your mission briefs are written in pencil on a bus ticket, that kind of thing.
Mm.
This was quite fun. We had a good time doing it. It was very silly. It was only a 2-hour slot, and I think that helped, because I'm not sure that it could really sustain the conceit for much longer than that.
Yeah.
He did suffer a lot from being, as they tend to be at Expo, in a hot, noisy room with eight other tables.
And people shouting at the other tables.
Yeah, I have run game. One of the reasons I gave up running games there myself was, you know, I am trying to do some thoughtful, investigative horror stuff, and the guy at the next table is very enthusiastic D&D.
Yeah, it does ruin the moment sometimes.
We managed that, but we all I played this with a couple of the Watson Hall crew, and various other people, and we were all at the end of it feeling absolutely physically wiped.
Hmm.
So yeah, care there. The Call of Cthulhu game was great because in part, apart from the good GM and decent scenario and so on, it was in a different room which was not super crowded. Was fairly quiet, and we were right next to a curtain, so it wasn't bouncing the noise back at us.
Yeah. the Wednesday, when the Wednesday night group was the Wednesday night club, we had a huge, very high hall for the last few years, and we actually bought some office partitions in order to make the sound absorbed by something and ensure that we could actually hear people at our table and not everybody in the room. It was a bit excessive, but on the whole, it was a good idea.
I still slightly miss my old house in East London, where I had a long, narrow room as my main room for guests to be in, games to be run and so on. And basically one of the long walls was completely covered with books, so it was acoustically dead. It was lovely.
Mm.
Well, if you're me, anyway. Most people apparently like a little bit of echo.
Yeah, let's be kind to our ears under all circumstances.
But anyway, yeah, good fun. And what else have I been up to? Something that I think is unique, we believe, we haven't found any others, this is the world's only GURPS fanzine.
Ah, yes, your oeuvre.
Your massive
volume. Another one is out.
Yes, we have just produced issue number 6, which, along with all the others, is freely available to kelly.lee/pathofcunning and with hyphens. That'll be in the show notes as well. If you are interested in GURPS or GURPS-related things, you may find it interesting. Now with shiny new software, which frankly shouldn't make a difference to your impression of it at all, that makes things, oh boy, much easier for us.
Huzzah for the shiny new software. And one other thing, I think, item of business.
Well, we've been sent some money by Brett Evel. Thank you very much, Brett.
Thank you.
We should play another game sometime if we can make the time zones line up. Yeah, this does encourage us to keep doing the show. If you want to do this, paypal.me/RogerBW is the easiest way of doing it, and just say that it's for this.
And we will thank everybody who sends us money, because at least once, because thank you. Keep doing it.
Unless we lose track of them, which is entirely my fault.
Yes. Everything that goes wrong on this podcast is entirely Roger's responsibility.
Usually.
I think we can establish that. Upwards, onwards, sideways. Those of you who are paying attention last month may recall that I was discussing what I was going to do next with one of my groups, and it will come as no surprise to anybody who knows me and knows my groups that I didn't end up with the thing I was planning on doing, and there were words exchanged about my tendency to jump about into new systems, which they say I never give them time to adjust to. And this may be because they start whinging about it, and we never get over that hump. Still, having put
have
it
have you considered in... dissolving your players and electing a new players?
I have considered the chopping up into small parts and using only the good bits to reassemble them. But but having firmly put a Band of Blades into reserve as something I can do at short notice if this starts to fall through, I came up with one of the systems they like and a setting that I haven't used before. This is going to be RuneQuest Glorantha, which we know pretty well, I've run a couple of things with it, and I think I'm used to the eccentricities, and I think I know enough now to adapt it to the needs of the new setting. And the story goes something like this. This is the setup. You are all members of a border legion, one of the provincial legions on the front with the wind-worshipping barbarians, who are going to get conquered thoroughly any day now. And rather than going off to the great celebrations when the when the new temple to the reaching moon is dedicated, you have been rewarded with a trip up to the capital because of outrageous courageousness and the need for people to have medals pinned on them at what I started out calling the Emperor's Birthday Parade.
I've got to have a show for the folks back home to show them how well the war is going, after all.
After all. And some legions have been invited entirely, but yours is just a small squad that's being sent up to the capital. And so you also have a small job of delivering the ashes of a lunar noble to his family after he died, unfortunately, being even more heroic than you are.
And it says so in the report and everything.
It says so in the report, and it's been approved by the Imperial war bureaucracy, so nobody could doubt that, possibly. And you've got a free jolly, a holiday up to the capital, all expenses paid, and you're going to meet the Emperor and have a medal stuck on you. And it all sounds jolly good fun. And when you get there, of course, things start to go wrong. I won't mention the things that go wrong. Those people who are very familiar with Glorantha Kurt will already have spotted the subtle reference in the introduction. I think some of my players may spot the subtle reference in the introduction. So my question is, and this is me picking Roger's brains, my question is, what do I do with I know one of the themes I think is going to be watching the start of the crumbling of the Empire at the moment of its crumbling from very close up. But most of it, I think, is going to be comedy. It's going to be country bumpkins who have always been terribly loyal to the Empire getting involved with the big metropolis. And discovering its delights and discovering how bad it can look when you don't have any friends on your side nearby. So what can we do with this, Roger?
Well, the first thing that strikes me is the innocence in the city. I mean, this has obviously been done a lot.
Yeah.
I see this in stages. You know, first of all, they get some very tempting and intriguing offers.
I'm not sure they'll complete their river journey up to the capital without some tempting and intriguing offers.
Well, let's consider the historical model for a moment, because in a realistic pre-germ theory world, country folk come to the city all the time, because when you come to the city, you mostly die of disease, poverty, starvation, etc.
Uh-huh.
And I realise that fantasy settings often have healing and so on, but they often imitate this model. So if country people come to the city on a frequent sort of basis, there is probably a whole ecosystem of criminality that is set up to receive those country people with their meagre savings.
Well, I think the point is going to be that when the imperial bureaucracy fails them, and it will, I think there's a whole paranoia episode in them trying to get their travel chitties and back.
Oh, sure, but that's not even what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that one of the ways you can survive in the city is to be a criminal who preys on the newly arrived country folk. Now, the newly arrived country folk who are also soldiers are obviously a bit more of a challenge. But that is there. So that as I see it, that is step one. Step two is they realise, hang on, they've encountered a scam or two, and they think, hang on, there's this stuff. It's completely blatant, and nobody is doing anything about it.
Yeah, that is something. I've been reading Citizens of the Lunar Empire, which is I'm planning to use extensively, which is the details of an insula, modelling the empire primarily on the Romans, but on
as
on
everybody a, does, yeah,
as everybody does, except for the ones who modelled them on the Persians. There's a block of flats in one of the in one of the poorer sections of town, and it's full of, well, soap opera characters and people recycled from British sitcoms, who are inhabiting it. And there's a place you can slot some newly arrived people into. And it emphasises there that it uses the informer model out of what's her name's Roman Falco novels.
Lindsay Davis. I was going to say this sounds a lot like something you could steal from. I read the first five or six of those back in the day when that was all there was. I haven't caught up. There appear to be, goodness, lots of them now.
Yeah. Well, there's lots about him, and there's more about the British orphan there that he and his wife adopted. And she starts up her own investigation business with Falco in the background. I've not read them all. There are a lot of them. I will also recommend, I can't remember what it's called, her book about, one of the emperors, not Domitian, his father. It'll come to me. But that's a very good biography from the point of view of the emperor's freedman mistress, which I recommend, if I can, and I'll put the title in if you remind me.
Vespasian,
that was it. Yes. She wrote a biography of him, whose name I cannot recall the name of, but it's very good. Okay.
So that's the thing. So step one, as I see it, is the petty criminality. Step two is, why isn't anybody doing anything about the petty criminality? Do any of them maybe come from the city in the first place?
Well, I'm thinking that they come. Some of them probably have to, but I'm going to give them a free choice of coming from urban Tarsh or rural Tarsh. You can be a sheep farmer on the lunar side.
So if they do, then A, presumably they have a certain amount of unfinished business, potentially. Mm. Yeah, the girl they left behind them, or boy, we're not going to be picky. The people they owed money to and joined up in a hurry to get away from, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But also the classic thing, you know, they joined up when they were idealistic, however many teen-year-olds, and now they have seen the war, and now they're coming back, and you know, they are saying to their friends, oh yeah, we can go to my old neighbourhood, it's great, and so, somehow it's not great.
Well, hang on, if you mean from the city, if you mean from the capital?
Yeah.
Then no.
Okay, fair enough.
They are from the furthest province, from Tarsh, and they probably think of themselves compared with the storm worshipping barbarians they're fighting as being sophisticated cosmopolitan people.
Mm-hmm.
But they ain't seen nothing yet. It's folk from Des Moines or somewhere equally Midwestern coming to New York for the first time.
Well, there's another thing. If the place they come from is relatively low on population mobility, which I think that setting mostly is, then you know, back home in the small town, you can't run a con game because after the first day, everybody will know that you are a con artist.
Yeah.
And you run out of victims. There are travelling folk who might do that sort of thing. The classic real world example with the patent medicine salesman, but essentially there is us, and then there is untrustworthy foreigners, or at least strangers. Yeah. Whereas here, you can get new victims to your con game simply by moving two streets over.
Hmm.
So again, there's a culture clash.
Okay, I think I give one of them a job from the Thieves Guild. You're going up to the capital, are you? Well, now there's a handsome coincidence. You remember that 600 lunars you owe me? Oh, no, it's 700 now, isn't it? Well, you just do me this small favour and we'll call it quits.
Combined interest is clearly divine magic. Don't ask which god.
Yeah, I think that might work. I was thinking in order to put a little more flavor on the characters. I mean, they're going to get a certain amount of flavor from the character generation system. There'll be the inherited glory and family reputation from their ancestors. But I was thinking that I might force them to be from different parts of Tash, from different villages, from having only come together, and then I can force some things into their background.
Yeah, in a GURPS term sense, that might be sense of duty, friends and companions, because these are the guys I fought with on the line.
Yeah.
I can trust them in a way I basically can't trust anybody else.
Yeah. I don't think the passion loyalty squad is in the character generation system. I have done once or twice before with RuneQuest, I think, because I think it suits it. Putting together a set of background advantages and disadvantages, one for each character and one left over, and allowing them to draft those, to pass them around the table, and choose to, I'll keep this one, I'll leave that one. Not to make any of them too obvious a trap, or any of them too great a benefit. But I think that might help make the characters different from the other half dozen recruits from the regiment who they could have sent up to the front, up to the capital, and got the jolly.
Well, and this is obviously going to be determined by your scenario, but the next stage for me is, okay, these are soldiers in the capital.
Yeah.
And the obvious thing there, and I have just been reading a book recommended by a friend of ours in which something quite like this happens. You know, you are in the capital for reasons in the case of this is Krasnostal's Barbarians at the Gates. The admiral who's been fighting the barbarians on the rim has been recalled to basically justify his existence to the Grand Senate. And while he is there, something happens. Oh dear, somebody's just blown up the major orbital defence station. We are now doing the automated chain of command traverse. You're it, Gov. But it doesn't have to be that grand. But, you know, a coup or a revolution or a little invasion or something like that. And if they don't pick a side, everyone's going to assume they did anyway.
Yeah, my initial plans were for them to get lost in the bureaucracy. They turn up, they have the proper paperwork, and then suddenly there's this huge calamitous disaster on the border where they came from. Now, there's several ways I can play that. One of them is that they get somehow associated with being responsible for it, but I don't think that's credible. They're a lieutenant or a captain with four squaddies. That's maybe a sergeant. That's not going to Centurion. I'm sorry. That's not going to be plausible. But somebody might, having a bad day, might drop something unpleasant on them. Or there's the fact that suddenly the Emperor's parade is cancelled for emergency reasons, and their units which were in the capital start getting sent to the border and instructed to do this, that, and to run about like headless chickens. But they don't have a unit. They don't have anybody to be with. And their duty was to report for a thing that is now not happening.
Presumably the planned path of this was something like, you turn up, you do the parade and ceremony and so on, and then we give you a travel warrant or equivalent to get back.
That's the idea. Their instructions. They have one advantage, which is they have a message to be delivered to a senator along with the ashes of his youngest son. That gives them an in, maybe, into investigating things, finding things out, into getting somewhere to stay. But But I can see them having a series of squalid but interesting adventures on the streets of the capital, of getting involved in things, of doing jobs just to keep them fed and housed.
While reporting into the administration for displaced soldiers or whatever it is, who say, "Yeah, the travel route will be coming through any time now. Just come back tomorrow."
You need to go to room 27B in the Great Sisters building, and speak to the centurion on duty there.
Have you ever played the Traveller Adventure?
I've read it, certainly. I can't
There
recall
there
that.
is a chapter in that which is essentially all about there's about a 40-ish person bureaucracy, and you have to navigate this and go to person X in order to get an appointment with person Y in order to discuss a thing with person Z to tick all the boxes on your wine export form.
There's definitely a rumbling paranoia episode going on in the background. I think that should be a background theme building towards something. I'm not quite sure what, but something. Maybe illumination. I'm not quite
Well,
sure.
the other thing that occurred to me, they're being told, right, you lot are going off to the capital, congratulations. And then a slightly more senior officer, probably somebody they quite trust, in Roman Legion terms, it would ideally be somebody like I've forgotten the term for it, the temporary commander of the Legion on the 1 year term.
A legate, consul
I've lost the terminology. I've never
pro
been that
consul.
solid on Roman organization. Ask Brett Devereux, great blog. You should read it. Anyway, he says something like, "Well, I can't leave the front. My posting isn't up. But could you just take this message to my old friend Cassius?"
Well, they've already
Completely harmless. Not in any way a conspiracy or treason related missive.
Yes, and there are two branches from that. One of the bureaucrats wants to search their belongings, or somebody at the or some over officious bugger at the gate is searching their belongings because they haven't been offered the proper bribe. Or you could.
Or, ooh, Cassius has just been arrested. What you got there, sunshine?
Oh, nothing at all. No.
So, yeah, I think there's potential for that. Yeah. Are they, in fact, being the unwitting pawns of a potential conspiracy, or do people just think they are?
There are always conspiracies.
And blame flows downhill.
And blame flows downhill. There's a thing called in the background called the dart competition, which basically is all out not quite warfare between factions in the lunar nobility who are trying to jostle for position or get somebody else kicked out of their satrapy so they can take over. And it's full of low level accidents, that's accidents in air quotes, happening to people. And that is something they really ought to ha or really ought to happen in the background, maybe. I think I can probably put some threads together. There's also the possibility of a set of mysterious serial killers or serial killings in the background, which is written into some of the material I'm stealing.
Well,
So that could be fun.
everybody knows if you wear a brass pauldron on your left shoulder, you're declaring your allegiance with the fish faction. Oh, you didn't know that. Well, don't worry, people will assume it anyway.
This is uniform. This is nerds, not. Oh yes, you need new uniforms to meet the emperor. That would be. Oh,
Don't
that
worry,
would.
we'll just take it out of your back pay.
Well, now I think they probably want cash up front because actually there's no such thing, and these are just people inserting themselves into the money stream that they're extremely limited. I remember people selling me things which they swore would start kickstart my acting career, and I was naive enough to believe them sometimes. First time, anyway.
And by the time you've voiced up, there's somebody a year younger than you who hasn't yet.
Correct. You're not wrong. I, on the other hand, have somewhat bitter memories of that. Okay, so yes, we've got lots of things. What sort of low-life adventures should they get involved in? I would think...
Well,
I mean,
whom do they know and like here? I mean, that might be nobody. But if there is somebody they like, then somebody they like can be in trouble.
Yes, actually, if I can establish the senator whose ashes they're delivering as a good sort in the early episodes, then we can watch his downfall, or they can get involved in stopping his downfall towards the end of the episodes. I think at the climax they should meet the Emperor. Let me write that down. At the climax, they should meet the Emperor and be disappointed.
I'm assuming this is not as frankly bizarre as the Warhammer 40k Emperor.
Not quite, but Argentius is... there's a... Yeah. The Red Emperor is the child of the Red Goddess, who was conceived while she was walking about on Earth and starting the conquest of her empire. However, he has changed masks every so often. At least that's what the way they express it. There are a group of people called the...
So it might be considered a reincarnation or something of that nature.
Yeah, but officially this is the same Red Emperor. Mm-hmm. He proves it by passing the same tests, which... proved he was the rightful emperor at the start, which are the same tests that have been taken by all the emperors going back to the beginning of time, including the one that was a dragon. And so this one is Argentius, and he has a fun-loving, partying personality, and is dedicating this incarnation to being the most debauched emperor anybody has ever seen. And this takes some doing, considering some of his predecessors. So, hang on.
I'm sorry, you cannot consume as much meat as the Emperor who was a dragon. You will burst.
A man's reach should exceed his grasp. Okay, so the senator, as the sole honest man, and their friend,
but still dead.
Well, no. This senator gets into trouble, and they have a chance to save him, I think. And maybe one of the canon things that happens in the background of this historical moment, and I am using canon as much as I can, and things other people have written as much as I can, because it saves me thinking and gives me inspiration, is that at the moment the disaster happens on the southern front, another disaster happens on the front with the horse barbarians to the east. And one of the causes about that, I think I'm going to say, is the units that have been withdrawn from the front to be on the Emperor's parade. And there's a chance.
Presumably, these guys, one party of PCs, are not a significant fraction of the total troop strength.
No,
this is the literary part we're talking about.
This is the direct part. And there's going to be a scramble to get them back to the front, and that's going to be part of the confusion in which they are lost. I'm wondering, it would be a very different campaign but I'm wondering if it would be if I should give them the option of volunteering for the front. No, damn it, they'll think of it for themselves. If they think it for themselves, then that makes sense, and I might let them have it. But I think if it doesn't come up, then I run the streets of the capital, the unglamorous streets of glamour campaign that I'm thinking of and which I'm preparing for. But I should be aware that there's a chance for them to take it elsewhere, as there's always a chance of that. Okay, I could see a climax I can work towards, which is the dark competition sweeps up the senator, and they have to do some very fast talking, thinking, fighting in order to save him. There may not be a lot of fighting here, but I think there should be some. They're soldiers, after all, and
a certain amount of blackmail-related research seems appropriate.
Yeah, digging around and making sure that I can't remember whether this system has carouse in it, but there should be.
What are the competition actually ashamed of having done?
I think it's more what are the things the competition least wants revealed about them? Shame isn't normally a problem. I mean, it should be a shame of some of the things they've done. Okay.
Ashamed of, we'll get banged up for heresy for ad local equivalent.
Yeah, there's plenty of unrest in the background. There is a lot of muttering written into the background about the white moon that is coming, the moon of peace, to replace the red moon. And there's lots of mystics and revolutionaries in the background. And all this stuff is a bit unreal to people who've just come in from the borders and don't even know which fork to use with fish.
Yeah, I think in terms of literary motif, the contrast is obviously unsophisticated but honest versus decadent and corrupt.
Yeah, I think there should be a. I don't know how hard to come down on them. I think if they're going to take any humiliation yet their characters suffer as pure humour. I think there should be a lot of humour in this. I also think there should be a fair amount of seriousness. But because
one way to do the flip on that is everybody thinks we're idiotic for country bumpkins. Therefore, they discount us as a serious threat.
Yeah. Yes, that could work. I think at least one of the players is going to want to use his manipulation and charm skills, and may even justifiably be able to use that. I think maybe bodyguard work for some of the factions would be appropriate, and there is a necropolis. And there are people poking around in the necropolis to try and retrieve buried items. So tomb robbers, archaeologists, that sort of scum. And therefore, that could be an element. I think I'm going to need to make the streets fairly rough in order to justify them being attacked. Nobody attacks obviously armed and obviously competent people.
Unless they think they can win.
True.
So, a large gang of street toughs, for example. So yeah. They can go 2-on-1, 3-on-1 with any individual soldier.
And that leads me to think how much trouble I should make the authorities give them for carrying weapons and wearing armour out of duty without authorization from an appropriate person to do so. Except that that's sort of They're going to end up in jail at least once, I think.
Well, presumably they will learn to do whatever the locals do in terms of self-defence, whether that is avoiding certain areas or carrying specific sorts of weapon which are winked at, or that kind of thing.
Yeah, full Legion gear is probably...
For a comedy moment, there should at least be somebody who steps out of a dark alley at them and says, "Oh, sorry, I thought you were someone else."
Give us your...
time of day?
Time of day? light for a pipe of Hazia? Were you interested in buying any Hazia, sir? Yes, it is illegal for me to be selling this. You're not going to give me a problem, are you? All right. I warned them in the first episode about weapons. Okay. I am wondering if I can write the first episode so that they stop off. This is the cook's tour, stopping off at some of the most beautiful and fascinating cities in the empire, and giving them a quick vignette, something ridiculous happening to a tourist from out of town in each of them, and give them a chance to so that the end of the first episode is them getting to the gates of the capital and showing their pass and still going ooh as yet they see the full moon directly up above and the crater which is the hole where the goddess snatched her body up from the earth, and all that sort of stuff, and all the people, the noise, the people, all that.
Some of the noise is also people.
All right, I think that sounds jolly. I think thank you for the product of your brains, Roger. Let's move on to the next thing. This is me picking Roger's brains. You do have some left, don't you, Roger?
Yeah, I'll grow back.
On another topic, which also emerges out of the complaints of my group, or rather an observation my Wednesday night group always makes, and this is that when I start a combat in any fantasy role-playing game, indeed in almost any game, when a combat starts, the enemy is always three rounds movement away. And I'm aware of this, and it's a bad habit, and it's not very realistic. It's good for story from a certain point of view. I'm thinking that there are stories in the bits that I don't do. I think my primary problem is that I don't have a good imagination of what distance is. That 50 yards and 100 yards, 150 yards, I know that they must be different. I know that half a mile is different from 150 yards, but I don't have a firm grasp. It's probably a failure in my schooling of how much, or my disinclination to walk very far. It's a failure in my imagination, and I can't quite get into my head what it is like to have the enemy approach you from a distance and you spot them at a distance. And I think that it is a failing in my understanding of how combat works. I think I can do from you've just spotted them over there to there, you're cleaning your weapons off and they've surrendered. I think I can do that well enough in most systems. But I can't do the bit about They're coming towards you. They're getting ready. They're readying their bows at extreme range, and now they're peppering you. I can't get from that to anything interesting.
Well, some of this is going to be very system dependent.
Yeah.
Because, for example, I have a friend in the Cambridge group who likes to say that GURPS combats are hermetically sealed, because a GURPS combat round is 1 second. It's unusual for a fight to take more than 5 rounds, 5 seconds.
True.
And most characters can move at a run maybe 5 or 6 yards in a second.
Yeah.
So if you are more than 30 yards away, there are doors and things in the way that you might have to stop to open, you're not going to be able to help in that combat. Unless there are ranged weapons involved and you really don't want to be shooting into melee in any system.
Yeah.
So, you know, if the system is like that, then you've got to say, well, once the melee fight has started, unless your friends are very close by, that is basically your fight to have. Whereas in a system like, what would it be in classic D&D? You've got a 1 minute combat round and sort of, does 60 feet sound plausible? So 10 yards in a combat round. So you're moving about twice as far.
Yeah.
And so on. I would like to quote from my GURPS Pathfinder game. Me as the GM. Your foe is standing on the other side of the room, by the window. Melee fighter. Charge! GM. Notes to future foes. Make sure the place you stand and pose is at least 6 hexes from the door.
Yeah. It's true.
The environment defines the range. If you're doing room to room, then probably what your range is the size of the room.
Indeed, I'm doing a lot of that at the moment in Martin's Dungeon Fantasy game, in which we are hex crawling. No, that's a term for something else. In which we are opening doors, finding things within, dealing with them, checking for treasure, and then going on. Hmm. That's very basic. GURPS covers it well. And people are firing into combat because 250 points of dungeon archer is just that good that he can take the -4 penalty for shooting past his friends and still hit on a 16 or less. So, and in some cases, aim for the vitals as well. But the problem is, the thing I'm not good at is in more open environments. In environments where you're going through along a road with some woods either side between two villages. And ahead of you, so there's a barrier across the road and it looks as though somebody's trying to stop you for toll. And it may be that there are people in the woods to either side who are going to come out and thump you if you argue about this. Now, that is a very different sort of a thing. And if they haven't bothered with the barrier and they're just sneaking along the side of the road and it's indeterminate when you're going to spot them, but it could be a good distance away, when they're out in the open, when there is a large space for them to get, for the enemy to get through and for them to get through to the enemy, I think is where I fall down.
Do you generally use a tactical map?
Not
necessarily hex grid, but just in general, just see where people are.
Yes, I can do pure theatre of the mind, but I'm aware of failures of communication. If I've got a table in front of me, then I'll use a tactical map. If I haven't, then I'm going to go all theatre of the mind.
It does seem to me that a reasonably capable system, certainly GURPS or RuneQuest, has the answers if you ask it. You have your observe hidden foe versus hidden foe stealth, for example. You roll that every so often, and then maybe the sharp-eyed guy says, that leaf up there doesn't look right.
Okay, but no. Do you, when you roll that, you're going to have to invent a system for this, because there isn't a clear system in either of the two game systems which my players like, RuneQuest and GURPS. But you have to decide at what distance they are spotted. Because spotting somebody...
You have range modifiers. At least you do in GURPS.
Ooh, that's a point. I haven't...
That is a penalty on your spotting roll. That's what it's for.
Oh, right, bugger. I've been very stupid about that in that case. So the bigger the better the roll, the further away they've spotted it. I've got a...
You could, you certainly could do it that way, or you could do it with multiple rolls, depending on how you want to take the approach, but yeah.
I don't think multiple rolls are...
You probably want a modifier for quality of cover, and maybe for how generally alert they are, which, frankly, if they're doing a multi-hour journey, then it probably is not very.
I would just take it off the base skill. Base skill modified by cover, and the margin of victory determines how far away they see.
Oh, but the other thing is, the people running the ambush need to be aware of them. They will expect to do this at greater range. Probably they will do that. Because the target is wandering down the road, fat, dumb, and happy.
Yeah.
So they have a plan. What is that plan? This will vary depending on who they are. If they are bandits, for example, then what they will plan to do is evaluate how hard this particular prey looks, decide can we take it or not, and if they can take it, they will attack by surprise at the range where they think they are most effective. If they are competent bandits with high bow skills, that might be a bit longer. If they're relatively low, then they may just want to say, you know, the wagon pulls up in front of the barricade, and at that point we all swarm out of the woods shouting, "Yah!"
I think it's a rule of writing this sort of story that the bandits are always overconfident. Either overconfident or desperate or both.
Yeah, but they don't have to be stupid about it.
True. Now, I'm not saying that, but
they at least think they have a decent chance.
I am saying that, bandits don't get common sense.
Depending on your world, they may well have had better options.
There's only so much you can satisfaction for players, not player characters, but players. You can get out of something rustled in the undergrowth over there, but nothing happened. I think most bandit encounters should stop like that when there are even slightly competent-looking player characters walking along the road. No matter if they are dumb unhappy, being on top of the crest of the road gives you maximum spotting distance. So you will not get any... have any cover unless you start slinking along the side of the road. Mm-hmm. That might be a response to spotting an ambush ahead. But the... But you will have the best line of sight towards where the other people are hiding.
And for that matter, you may have the situation of the caravan spots the bandits and says, "Well, hang on, we've got plenty of guards and so on. Perhaps we ought to engage these guys as a favour to the rest of the caravans on this road network, if you've got that sort of society."
Yeah, I can see. On the other hand, there is an employer on caravans, and the employer doesn't want to have to pay out death benefits or to hear from your grieving widow.
Yeah, but does the employer have other caravans?
Yeah, in that case, he might well say, "Right, let's clear these scum out. I'm not leaving them around to ambush my cousin."
I think I've spoken before about my mental model of a good fight in GURPS, which goes, hey, Fritz, did you hear something? Pause. Gurgle. And for me, that's great. You know, fights are ambushes. They are over quickly. Often one side doesn't have time to realise they were in one. But if you have players, including yourself, who want to have a fight in the classic dungeon bashing sense, then they're not going to be happy with that.
Yeah.
And to some extent, you may need to tweak things to make that happen.
I think the problem here with breaking up the jolly good fight is the scout sneak sniper characters who are going to want to get away from the main group, sneak through the undergrowth and kill people from a distance, which is fine, but it can spoil the fun of other people. I think that's not all right. So basically, we want some sort of circumstance in which what we want here is for the merchant to say, keep going, act casually, be ready to take them when they charge out. I think that's the only way that you clear out the bandits.
Yeah, so at that point, the bandits are thinking, we have surprise.
Yeah.
While the PCs are thinking, we know exactly where they are, we're just waiting for the moment.
Yeah.
And at that point, both sides think they can win, which is a good precondition for a fight to happen.
Yes, actually, you're entirely correct. Wars are started that way, and who are we to argue with wars? Is there an easy equivalent for RuneQuest there probably is. I probably have to look it out.
I don't have the RuneQuest skill list sufficiently in my mind, but I know there's a move quietly.
There's a move quietly. There's a spot hidden, or whatever they're calling it in the current edition.
I don't think you have quite such a comprehensive range system, but I think it ought to be possible to do something along those lines.
Yeah. Talking of ranges, it occurs to me that what I would like to transfer the range system from a narrative game like Fate into more simulationist systems like GURPS and Fate. I can't remember what Fate calls it, but there's out of sight, there's a long way away, there's within missile range, there's within melee range, and then there's right in your face and close up.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of hand waves shifting from one to another, and this is because time, my lord, goes all wibbly wobbly in Fate.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to do one. What I'm doing with the three melee round build up is limiting the amount of preparation the player characters can make to one or two things. I ready my weapon, I cast my spell, or I ready my spell and I cast my weapon, one of the two. And but if you give them a shift from out of sight into sight, insight to extreme bow range, and extreme bow range to melee range, shifting that each time, then it's not really justified from the point of view of physics. But it has much the same feel as the three second preparation time.
Yeah, Genesis has a similar system of range bands, and it simply hand waves over the problem that my range to you may be missile range, and your range to him may be missile range, and his range to me may be melee, or maybe missile range, or maybe something else. You just can't map that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but in Genesis, you roll some dice and then say what happened afterwards.
You do specifically have the maneuver of, I want to close by one range band.
Yeah.
To him, And if I close to him, am I closing the distance to his buddies as well, or not?
Uh-huh.
The game does this not talk is,
this
about
is
that.
The, this is the problem with all theatre of the mind. People have different minds.
Mm.
Write that down. It's almost profound. Yeah, the visual, what I think I have described clearly, has conjured up in the minds of my players something entirely different. Mostly, either because I've used the wrong word, or they've heard the wrong word, or there is no word for the thing that we're trying to communicate mutually.
Sure. I mean, with the Cambridge group, they when we were playing face-to-face, they would quite often ask, can we have a sketch map of this? And yeah, sure. Now that we're mostly playing online, that's a bit trickier, but I can whip something up in Inkscape that's not wildly wrong.
Yeah. Fate is good for sketched maps, for there is an area over here, there is an area over here, and here is the area where you are. And it's all very... it shouldn't challenge the cartographical skills of a six-year-old. So, I found that a few times I played Fate, it worked very well. Fate isn't my favourite system for other reasons, but it did that well.
Hmm.
All right, I have made all the mental notes I've made here before, but I'll make them again, and hopefully our listeners, will have tricks and observations and things that they always do, which can help.
Well, I'd just like to say, I think my general approach to setting up any sort of fight is essentially combat psychology.
Go on.
Who is it who's going to be fighting you, or whom are you going to fight? How perceptive are they? How stealthy are they? And so on. But basically, what is their goal, and how do they plan to achieve it?
Mm.
Now, some of the people and indeed things that you fight in a game may not be terribly bright, may not do a whole lot of planning.
Yeah.
Your basic, what is it in RuneQuest, the acid blob amoeba thing?
Oh, the gorp.
He's basically gonna jump out at you going flobble.
And you're gonna scramble back saying, don't let it touch your boots.
Yeah, but he doesn't, as far as I'm aware, have the intelligence to set up an ambush.
No, it is alignment hungry.
Yeah, so that tells you what a fight with that is going to be like.
Hmm.
Whereas you get some... I've forgotten what the various RuneQuest monsters are. You get some sort of intelligent rabble, the equivalent of your kobolds.
Oh, yeah. Let's not bring... Kobolds are a racial slur waiting to happen. Brews. Brews are intelligent.
RuneQuest, that's the sort of thing. But basically, they may well be aware that individually they can't hope to beat a big, tough hero. So they will try to set up an ambush. They will try to mob somebody and so on.
Yeah.
And basically, who they are, how intelligent they are, what they want, dictates what they will do in terms of actually moving around on the map and hitting you.
Hmm. Well, I think with the caravan coming along the road, the deadliest thing would be Robin Hood and his merry men, a bunch of well-concealed, skilled archers filling your caravan with arrows, and hoping to either kill you or drive you off out of range so that they can loot what's left behind. And facing that down would actually be a very difficult tactical problem.
Or another approach, you don't have the barrier on the road, but as part of the initial attack, trees fall across the road in front of and behind you.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, it's a classic for a reason, and I'm fairly convinced that if I put my player characters in front of it, rather than being the bold men of the Greenwood, if they were the fat guarding the plump and prosperous merchant, God bless him, then they might be in a great deal of trouble.
And it's quite reasonable in the right society, in a setting where these things are understood, that the merchant will say, okay, maybe we could fight you off, but we would take a lot of casualties doing it. Can we make a deal? You know, you don't get everything, but you get something and nobody has to bleed. And the bandits may well feel the same way.
Maybe. But on the other hand, the player characters want to fight.
At which point the merchant turns pale and says, no, we had a deal, gurgle.
Well, they're not going to get a bonus at the end of the journey. All right, I think we've hacked this to pieces well enough. Let's move on. If you want, as I was saying a few moments ago, to send us your observations on what you do well in combat and what you do badly for that matter, and what you find works and what doesn't, then you can contact us by...
Leave a message on the website or email podcast@tekeli.li.
And we will see you again next month.